You're listening to Revolutionary Mystic, a subversive spirituality podcast where witches of color are disrupting, dismantling, and decolonizing mainstream spirituality with intersectional feminism, ancestral magic, and revolutionary thought, one unapologetic, real talk conversation at a time, featuring your host, international psychic medium, hoodoo root worker, and astrologer, Megan Alexandria.
Hello and welcome everybody to the Revolutionary Mystic Podcast. This is a sacred space where queer, trans, disabled people of color share our wisdom and experiences at the intersection of spirituality and revolutionary thought. I'm your host, Megan Alexandria of Revolutionary Mystic. Revolutionary Mystic is my business where I do my work as a psychic medium, a hoodoo root worker, evolutionary astrologer, and spiritual teacher. Revolutionary Mystic is also an online community of radical witches and spiritual seekers around the world. This work and podcast is named Revolutionary Mystic because my spirit guide sent me a message clairaudiently with the wisdom that each of us innately carries the potential to wield our power in a revolutionary way, and that we are the remedy to all that seeks to destroy us in our indigenous ways. So today I have the privilege and honor of chatting with my dear friend and our guest, JL. Hi, JL.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm really excited to chat with you today. For those of us that are tuning in, can you tell us a bit about who you are and your identities, your pronouns, and what you do?
Sure. I'm actually going to introduce myself to you all with my full given name. Ooh. My name is Jana Lynn Caldetera Umipig. My mother is Rosemary Caldetera Umipig, and my father is Godofredo Peralta Umipig. My family comes from the northern part of the Philippines in an area called Ilocos. My mother is from Ilocos Norte in Pagudpud, and my father is from Ilocos Sur in Santa Maria. And I also live currently on Lenape territory, and I was born and raised in the Kingdom of Hawaii in Honolulu, mm-hmm. in the Kalihi Valley. So that's like, those are the land origins that have raised me up and that I currently occupy. Mm-hmm. And I go by she, her, but, you know, preferably I like just to hear my name here and there, you know. JL was a given name to me out here in New York City by some of the young people I work with and also some comrades, and kind of stuck with me since. And so JL is always real good as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Perfect. I love how you gave the full, like, it's like almost like an indigenous perspective introduction. And that's something that's inspiring me right now. Like, ooh, I want to introduce myself that way.
Yeah, that's actually a teaching from one of my elders out here in the diaspora. And one of the beliefs that I have is that when I name my mother and my father, who are the living ancestors that I can, that I know and that I can recognize their name fully, mm-hmm. that the names of all the ancestors who I don't know can be echoed in, like be called in, yes. as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Way to bring it. I love that. What a fabulous way to start. That's yeah. awesome. So
thank you.
Mm-hmm. Welcome. And, you know, thank you for joining me here today. How are you? I know you just finished traveling. Do you want to let everybody know?
Yeah. So I just came back from the Ohlone and Tongva territories. Mm-hmm. I've been traveling just for the summer. I'm a full-time school teacher, like doing the 9 to 5 or really like the 6 to like 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. On the daily. But summer vacation is a really great time of liberation for us, where we get to just kind of like be in a place of like replenishment and also just being able to do the things that our heart calls us to. And so I'm able to do a little bit of the sacred work that I want to during the summertime that I have been doing in connection to my teaching during the school year, but I get to like really invest. So I was out there actually visiting family and also going to a really lovely like union of one of my college roommates. She had her wedding, and so I was out there for that. But wherever it is that I travel, I also answer the call that community makes for me to do circles. So I was out in Ohlone territory, for those that don't know what that territory is, that's a lot of the Northern California Bay Area is Ohlone territory. And so I was out in San Francisco and Oakland. In San Francisco, I was at the Bayanihan Center in SoMa doing a really beautiful sharing and circle with a group of women doing this work that I have been cultivating called Sex Talk Story. Mm. Talk Story being a tradition from the Hawaiian culture that I grew up with, where, you know, when you're just like sitting around in the sala or like the living area and just like having family time and chilling, when the elders, like all of a sudden, just start to talk. Mm-hmm. And then all of the wisdom starts to surface and you just kind of take it in. It's not necessarily like a formal setting, but it's meant for lessons to be gathered. And so Sex Talk Story is kind of work that I've been doing to really like transmute the shame that we've been experiencing in our communities and be in a position of really understanding the power of sex and mm-hmm. the power of like sexual energy that is rooted in the indigenous understanding of matriarchy and of women's bodies. Mm-hmm. And so we've been doing a lot of just kind of historical unpacking of the colonization of the bodies in relation to the land of the Philippines, talking and dismantling sex work, because, you know, in the Philippines, we have a lot of prostitution that has been really shaped by colonization and militarization of our land. Mm-hmm. And then also talking about a lot of the ways that the Catholic Church had also created a lot of that shame mm-hmm. and a lot of the feelings that our bodies have to be covered, or like that we can't activate our sexual powers, and trying to do some really deep work of relearning some indigenous understanding and practice of our sexual energy. So that was what I was doing on Ohlone territory in San Francisco, SoMa. And then I went to Oakland with my partner in crime and my sister, Jamie Yankovitz, who is the founder of Survival Arts. Her and I have grown partnership with each other in the past year and have been doing some work called Sacred Survival Sisterhood, mm-hmm. which integrates the ancestral and political framework that I do around decolonization mm-hmm. With the form of Kali, which is a form of Filipino fighting arts that both Jamie and I partake in, and that Jamie has like been teaching and been like really cultivating learning space for women, and not just cis women, but those that are also transgender and non-gender binary. So we are doing these circles together continuously now. And so we did one in Oakland by Lake Merritt, and then we went over to Tongvar and circled up in the Long Beach area with a group of women at Flora y Tierra, mm-hmm. a really like revolutionary sacred space that folks should be connected to if you are in Long Beach, that's doing some really dope work and is run by a really dope sister named Mama Mais, who is an herbalist and an energy healer and just really dope people. So, you know, I'm coming back from all that energy and all that sisterhood, and it's mm-hmm. really, really dope. And I'm just trying to take really good care now of just like the last few days of my summer to spend some time with my partner and be in home and yeah, just ready myself. So yeah. That was a lot, right?
No, that was amazing. I'm sure everybody else that's listening is just like, wow, this is amazing. And just like, it just makes my heart so happy to hear that there are all these amazing things happening and that you're doing and creating all of these amazing spaces. And mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of folks are just like, it's opening their eyes to like, wow, there are things like this available. And you know, I think it's good that you're here talking about it, so that way people know that they can look for things like this, you know, that mm-hmm. we don't have to be, because I mean, more or less, like, we're pretty surrounded by colonialism. And that is oftentimes, I find, very kind of suffocating or feels intrusive and harmful. And so knowing that we can seek out these types of spaces, and if they don't exist, that it's also an option to be somebody like you and to, you know, go out and create these spaces, because they're so important.
Weird. Thank you.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what I want to talk about next is a section that I call What's Good, and it's inspired by a podcast that's also based out of the Ohlone territory, which is also known as Oakland, California, close to where I live here in the Bay Area. And the podcast is called Hella Black, and I love Hella Black. It's a really good podcast. If you haven't heard it before, I highly suggest anybody check it out. It's just two woke brothers talking about relevant things and important subjects. But one of the things that they begin their show with is a section called Black Joy, and they share what has been Black Joy for them, whether it was something in current events or it was something in their own personal lives. And since I don't have strictly Black folks on this podcast, and we have, you know, a variety of POC, which is awesome and wonderful, I decided to call my version of this section What's Good. So JL, I want to know what's good right now for you on your path. And then after you share, I'll follow.
Yeah, you know, what's really good right now is relation, like just relationships are a lot. There's a lot of light around that for me in the current, you know. I think that when we're on a path of doing this liberation work, sometimes relations don't necessarily stay intact because there are a lot of differing views and a lot of folks become very divisive. And there's like a lot of like just kind of competition and ego, and there's all these different things that start to come up. And so for a long time, I just wasn't in the place of building the deep relationships that I could in the work. And I was building spaces where folks could do that with each other, but was distancing myself because of some past hurts that I had in trying to build really deep foundations of like creating, you know, like future relations that would be like, these are the folks that are going to help me raise my children, you know? And so I had a lot of experiences of just like hurt and betrayal and a lot of feelings of, just like severing of relationships that were really, really difficult. And people who I really felt my liberation were bound with, just like moving in whatever direction they needed to for themselves. And that was like for a while. And this past year, and like just like today, it's like it's really, really in my heart. I feel like I look around me and I see the mirrors that are next to me, and they are people who are totally in line with the walk that I've been called to answer. And I feel also so good just about the way that those individuals are people that can check me and that I can check, and that, like, you know, sometimes that's another part of why relationships can't deepen, is because folks, you know, what I started to feel, and I'm sure you feel this as a healer as well, there were many times when I felt like people were just rolling with me because they needed something from me, or they or I was fulfilling something for them, or like holding them down, and so they felt real good about that. And so that was really difficult for me for a long time, was that I also felt like people weren't willing to check me, or that if I checked someone, like, and I was really just like doing the work of being like, hey, look, I'm seeing that there's something that's going on here that I don't feel like is aligned with like who I see you as your greater self, that, you know, they would check out, because it was just like, I don't know if I feel okay with someone telling me like about the parts of myself that are shadows, which, you know, we all have our homies that like are our cheerleaders, and those are hella important as well. The ones that will always be like, yeah, girl, like I'm totally with you. Or if someone, if you're in a conflicting situation, they're always going to take your side, you know? But when you have folks who can be like, oh, I see your perspective, and also you should take a look at this and think about this and ask this question, that's when you know that there are people who are willing to grow with you and to grow you. So I feel that with the people that I work with in closest proximity with my sacred work. I also feel that with my partner. I love him so much. Like, I'm going to say that really loud and clear to folks, which, like, you know, being in a long-term, like, heteronormative relationship for such a long time, it's been very difficult to really unpack a lot of the dynamics that happen patriarchally. And I feel like we've begun to, like, create and solidify some strong rituals that have been elevating the relation and that have allowed us to be in question about how our relationship is truly mm-hmm. In line with liberation. So I feel hella good about relation right now. That's yeah. how I feel.
I am like taking all of that in and receiving it. That is such beautiful, beautiful magic right there. That is amazing. Thank you for sharing about relation, you know, and it totally, I was totally going to mention something else. But then once you started talking about relation, and one of the things that I am realizing as you were speaking, that when you and I talked before we started recording, like when I first talked to you and reached out, that whole process is been a deepening of relation for me. And I don't know if you can relate to this, but in doing this work, especially in really, really holding accountability and really, really holding integrity, it doesn't gain me a lot of friends.
Yeah.
and it doesn't, yeah, right. And it doesn't gain me like more, like it doesn't make you popular. It doesn't gain you more friends. It oftentimes doesn't the people that you're related to, happy, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of cost that comes with, you know, living in truth and mm-hmm. aligning with revolutionary living and thinking and such like that. And so by nature of like being who I am and existing the way I do and living the way we live, like it's gotten a little isolating. And, you know, especially because what I do is primarily on the internet, that is kind of takes away from like the presence of like the physical space that I'm in a lot. And I think that in connecting with you and the other folks that I've been reaching out to and getting to have these amazing conversations with, I'm getting to relate with other, you know, other people that are walking the walk and have their own medicine to bring to the world and I can relate to. And it's just been feeling really, really good. And also like medicinal to just see that like amidst all the, you know, things in the world that are needing to be challenged or needing to be changed, et cetera, and so forth. There's also these like really amazing things happening because we're making them happen because you're making them happen. And so getting to see that, like having that in my direct line of sight, getting to have this conversation with you and get to take in all the wonderful work that you're doing. It makes me so happy because it's like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, there are wonderful things happening in the world. And oh yeah, that's right. You know, we are still here and we are bringing the medicine. We are creating change. And, you know, I think that that's what's giving me a lot of joy right now.
Yeah.
I needed this. So, you know, and kind of like you were saying, like, as a healer, as a, you know, spiritual teacher, I hold a lot of other space for other folks to connect. And, you know, that's what I thought I was doing in creating this podcast is I was like, oh, okay. Like this gives, you know, the people I'm going to be talking with a chance to connect with the people who are listening. And I totally forgot that like, I'm going to be getting to connect with you all too. And so,
yeah.
So this is wonderful. But yeah, thank you for sharing about relationship because it really just brought me into that. That's something I'm getting to do through this. And you reminded me of that. So thank you. Now, I really want to ask you about all the things that you do because you do so many wonderful things. And I don't know which you would like to begin. Well, let's talk about, I love that you teach other women how to fight. And I want to know, you know, what that was born out of. Where did that come from? How did you start? What was your call to action? You know, what happened?
My goodness. So, I mean, like in terms of survival arts and the sacred survival sisterhood, which is what me and Jamie are on the walk with together, the story about how the two of us kind of came to do this work in union is a mixture of things. One, the both of us have been practicing in a very particular system of martial art, or not, I don't want to call it martial arts. So we're moving away from the term of martial arts also, because martial kind of denotes it being connected to militarization. Mm-hmm. So we talk about the work that we do as an indigenous fighting art. Mm-hmm. And it's a particular type of fighting art that comes from Bacolod in the Negros Occidental region of the Visayas. And it's called Pakiti Tersha Kali. And that meaning, Pakiti Tersha meaning closed quarters, which means that we are most powerful when someone is trying to get up in our space, which is totally what women have to deal with on a daily basis. It's like the violence of just like patriarchy trying to get up in our space. And in terms of our physical space, in terms of our space spiritually, and also in terms of our space in, like, even in the social media world, you know, the more that we become visible doing this work, the more folks try to step up to us. Mm-hmm. I want to, like, you know, put in the forefront that I actually am not a teacher. I'm a facilitator of the work.
Okay.
And I want to be, like, really clear about that, because there are politics around, and this is another reason why it's really sticky. And this is actually the first time that I'm really talking about this in public. So I'm going to, like, really hold firm to it, that I'm making the decision to really go there. But I've been training in Pakiti Tersha Kali for about 5 years now. And I used to roll with, like, a group out here for very consistently. I was training like 5 to 6 days a week, and really just like honing in on my skill and doing all the things that I needed to do to strengthen myself. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of all of that, I was experiencing really difficult times in my life, deep, like, shadow work. Yeah. And, you know, I was doing some freelance work at the time when I diminished the amount of training I was doing. And it was really, really difficult, because if you are training and you're training consistently, it becomes such a huge part of your life. Mm-hmm. But in the midst of me having to confront a lot of difficult life lessons and just saying yes to my spiritual path, which is an entirely different part of my story. And the more you walk your spiritual path, the uglier it gets, you know.
Yep.
and like, the more you're confronted with, like, the shadows and the dark stuff that, like, you maybe never wanted to look at before. And so I was going through that, and it was making it very difficult for me to really invest in a lot of the circles that I used to be a part of. And it was just really hard. It was really hard to continue training, primarily also because I was training with all men. Like, the group that mm-hmm. I was working with, like, we would have a couple of women coming in and out, but women never usually stuck around, because let's just face it, you know, like, if you're in a space of any type of fighting art, martial art training that's primarily with men, you have to kind of switch up your demeanor. Mm-hmm. And that you have to stomach sometimes some of the misogyny and, like, the patriarchy that exists. And, mm-hmm. you know, also as a Filipina, like, learning a Filipino fighting art, it was really difficult sometimes to just be surrounded by a lot of folks who weren't Filipino. Mm-hmm. And as much as, like, I loved and felt close to a lot of those brothers that were a part of the crew, there were a lot of differing viewpoints that I had. And there were a lot of moments where I would hold my tongue about the way that just, like, colonization mindsets would be, like, in my classmates. And, like, and I felt like I was compromising some of those things sometimes just to kind of train, so that I could train.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the reason why I left and stopped training with the group as consistently. That was primarily because I chose myself first.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ready to just, like, take the time to heal and to put everything in place for myself. And when I started to start feeling like I was ready to really train again, Jamie and I reconnected. So we had met in the Bronx long before, and she had been doing her own path stuff as well. And she started doing survival arts in the Philippines and then brought it to the West Coast. And her and I were just kind of, like, bigging each other up. That's one of the things I love about social media, is you can just big people up, you know, and just, like, see the people who you are, like, yo, I really see you, sis, and I'm with you, you know. And the two of us, like, just got on this like DM once and was just like, yo, we need to just be doing something together. Yeah. And we got on a phone call, spoke for a couple of hours, and began just like realizing how aligned we were with each other. And so why we do this work, and primarily why do we work with women who, you know, are indigenous, diasporic, migrant, non-binary, and trans, like why do we choose to work with those women? It's because we recognize that we're the ones that are targeted in a patriarchal and white supremacist shaped world. Mm-hmm. So we honor the lives that have been lost and tortured and traumatized and enslaved and confined and imprisoned, like women who fought to survive so that we could live, so that the lineage of women and all of life could continue, because women are creators in our sacred path, you know. And I don't want to just diminish that, or not diminish it, because this is not a diminishing at all, but I'm not just going to say that in regards to like birthing children into the world, but women create. Like, mm-hmm. that is a part of our power. Mm-hmm. And so we choose to put the tools of warriorship and healing in the hands of those whose bodies are most threatened by the violence of colonization, yes. Which means like anything that has to do with patriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. And we guide them in holding and embodying a warrior energy through a matrilineal, matriarchal, divine feminine way of being. Because we believe that when the movements and actions of worship are in the bodies that tap into the matrilineal, in the matriarchy, mm-hmm. and the divine feminine, that we actually transmute violence mm-hmm. into the protection served through the energy and intention of justice. Yes. So it's like, we're not just out here being like, oh, kill people. Yes. We're here allowing the women to understand that the violence doesn't just have to come from the kill. It comes from an energy of protection and servitude, you mm-hmm. know, and it comes from justice. And that's actually like something that I've really come to around anger, right? Because a lot of the time what we see and a lot of the women who come through is that they're hella ready to just like go in because they're so angry at the way that the world is up against us and continuously like just straight up violent toward us.
Yeah.
And so the rage comes out. And my therapist, I go to psychotherapy once a week, and my therapist, whose name I know, you know, we need to, but her name is Mariana Miskovic. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's looking for a really dope ass migrant woman to be their, to be their psychotherapist in the Lenape territory in New York City, like holler, they're really amazing. And you know, I was going through some things around my anger and just like the displacement of my anger with her. And she told me like, you know, your anger shows up in the way it's supposed to in your work that you talk to me about your activism.
Yeah.
She's like, anger is a compass. It is what tells us what is unfair, what is unjust, mm-hmm. and it asks us to listen carefully to those lessons, you know? Yeah. And I really felt like I held true to that. I think that my dog just barked. I'm so sorry. my dog was like, yeah. So, you know, so that's kind of the way that we see, you know, we see this work. Like, we look at the work of survival arts, and see like the difference between violence that's centered in the attainment of power and focused on like selfish control and gain, mm-hmm. and make it into something that is more about being relational, mm-hmm. and communal in warriorship. And we protect the sacred, you know, mm-hmm. that's what we do. We protect the sacred and allow like that anger to be centered on in a discernment that is about being just and following the will of liberation, because we believe that our indigenous warriorship did that. You know, they were in prayer when they were going to war, mm-hmm. Because they were there to protect their people and their land. Mm-hmm. And that's why when like the colonizers tried to come through the Philippines, like it took them a really long time to take parts of the Philippines down. And they haven't taken all of it. There are many indigenous people who don't even claim themselves as Filipinos because they believe their indigenous territories were never ceded. So mm-hmm. they name themselves by their tribes as opposed to naming them Filipinos. And so all of this is like the reason why, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know, but like Ferdinand Magellan was killed by Filipinos. Our Datu Lapu Lapu, like from the Visayas, like straight up cut that dude's head off and was like, get off our land. Like,
yes.
Y'all aren't going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I always like hold true to those energies of ancestry that I hold. Like the healer is very, very a part of who I am and who I've been growing and becoming by the will of spirit and my ancestry. Mm-hmm. And also I know that the warrior part is super important.
Yes.
In this time in particular, you know?
Yes.
So that's why we do what we do and how we do what we do and why we also integrate the ancestral remembrance work. So
yes.
I also do like really deep like ancestral spiritual work, and one of the things that I work with folks to do, and so I have mediumship also in my background, but we do a lot of work to assist sisters who are tapping into their connection to their ancestors,
mm-hmm.
To dispel the fear around it, mm-hmm. and to start gaining the tools as well to connect to spirit in a good way and have good relations. So mm-hmm. that in combination with the warrior training, so it's like spiritual training and then warrior training, like being kind of integrated into each other, that's the work that we do. So, you know, Jamie takes, so we both do the Kali,
mm-hmm.
and I have a group of women that I facilitate out here on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
but Jamie's our teacher. Like she is the kind of like the beginning of the teaching unit. I am not in the position to hold a title of teacher at this time, and just to be in honoring of those who are and those who are my teacher,
mm-hmm.
I make it really clear to folks that I'm here facilitating the work that our teacher Jamie has given me permission to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I go out and I teach, I do educate the young, or not the young people, I'm like always in that point, but I educate our sisters here and do facilitation of their continued training until the next time Jamie and I can be in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the one that leads up like all of the ancestral remembrance work and do the spiritual work and hold space with sisters to do that amidst all of it. So that's what that is.
That's amazing. Like, I wish you could see me right now. But I'm just like super excited about everything you're talking about. So interestingly enough, and not surprisingly, that you and I should cross paths at this time. I too carry a lot of warrior energy.
Yeah.
And it, a lot of times it's like the first thing that people notice about me. And you know, part of my process lately, I think for like the last like year or so, has been reckoning with righteous rage and undoing a spiritual, colonial spiritual trope, which is that my anger is there because it's meant to be pacified or healed or, you know, otherwise turned into something else or fixed or whatever the colonial bullshit is. And
yeah.
Right? And none of that ever like sat right with me. It was like, that just really feels like counterintuitive. It feels counter to what my body wants to do. And
yeah.
I hold a lot of anger and a lot of rage. And I'm one of those people that when I am angry, I always say it's like I'm like a cast iron skillet. Like once I get heated, it takes me a long time to cool off because I'm like that heated. And, you know, reckoning with that on a spiritual level, like took a lot of like deconstructing, you know, colonial like spiritual principles of like what it means to be spiritually whole or what it means to be quote unquote enlightened or whatever.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, what brought me into wholeness was ditching that colonial bullshit, number one, and in its place, bringing in like indigenous wisdom and being like, oh, hey, the part of me that that colonial shit is trying to rid of is the indigenous part of me. Because my ancestors, hell yes, they were warriors. Part of my ancestry is Oglala Lakota Sioux. And part of my ancestry is indeed Apache. And, you know, one of the things that I grew up being told my whole life was that anytime I would like lose my temper or whatever, I'm like, oh, you're just an angry Apache woman, or, you know, hot-blooded Indian, like that type of thing. And, you know, a lot of it like felt like I could feel it. I was like, well, yeah, like that's in my blood. And so then I started to realize that if it was feeling counterintuitive to want to do away with that, there was a reason for that. And it was because, you know, I don't want to lay down my ancestral gifts, my ancestral wisdom. And so I was like, okay, well then what do I do with all this fucking rage? And that's where, you know, like you were saying, like one of the great ways of channeling that rage is through activism. And I think there's a very important delineation that needs to be made in the spiritual world, and that, you know, you and I are saying it, speaking it now, and I hope many people hear it, is that, you know, there's more than one type of anger. There's abusive, manipulative anger, and mm-hmm. then there's like anger that actually comes from a place of love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that that's where ours comes from. And so it's interesting because a lot of times I feel like even in social media, I don't know if it works this way for you, but I feel like people really, really love me when I'm like, you know, chill or happy or, you know, have something light and fluffy to say. And then when I am like, you know, laying it down for them, like, this is not okay. Like, this is not, you know, going to fly with me. Like, you know, just really like speaking truth to power. All of a sudden people get like shook and like don't know what to do, or, you know, feel some type of way about seeing a spiritual person in a place of rage. And, you know, I had one person the other week, goodness, what did that person say? They ended up unfollowing me, which was really funny because they let me know. They're like, I had been following you for a while, but now I'm going to unfollow you. I'm like, okay. But they were like, they said something to the effect of like, clearly I was letting negativity lead the way and that I'm being misguided by anger. And I was like, misguided by anger? What do you mean misguided by anger? Like, anger is showing me, like you said, it's a compass.
Mm-hmm.
It's a compass. And so for the folks at home that are listening, you know, if you feel angry, good.
Yeah. Yes, good.
And, you know, like, I'll be real, like, I don't know. I think sometimes I say it like in my Instagram stories, like I'll kind of jokingly say it, and I'm joking in a loving way, but I really do wake up angry a lot. And it's not because I want to wake up that way. Like, no. You know what I mean? It's just by nature of being who we are and the world that we exist in. And like, from the moment we wake up, shit gets real. And so,
One of the like biggest learnings and understandings that I have, like being a healer, and also like I translate it into warrior work as well, is mm-hmm. that like, there's a difference between being reactionary and mm-hmm. relational.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we are in a position of being relational, and that we live and we, you know, root ourselves in the relational, that, yeah, anger is always going to be a part of the way that we walk. It's going to be a part of it mm-hmm. because in relation to a world that is devastating in so many different ways, and that we come up against so many injustices, mm-hmm. The anger is always present. Mm-hmm. It just always is. And for us to, like, the moments when we don't have all of our emotions kind of flowing through us, and, you know, a lot of folks try to draw away from that, right? Like, people mm-hmm. are always looking for joy primarily, and it's like, mm-hmm. no, joy can't happen without the sorrow, you know? And mm-hmm. I think about Khalil Gibran and like the prophet and his like work around that and that understanding and all of the different really prolific folks that have written about that balance and that understanding. Like, we can't just live in one or the other all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like that compartmentalizing thing comes from colonized mentality. Mm-hmm. And it is another tactic and way of controlling us from being able to stand up to the injustice. And so I'm angry all the time too, sis. And I've learned like how to hold that like in a relational way, just like you're saying. And I think that folks, that we should learn to be in that more, because the reactionary is when it becomes depleting, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we feel like we, like folks, and then healing that happens too, right? We just wait until we're like hella in need of the healing, then we go look for like some healing work, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to being in a place where we are always in relation to our wellness, and we are always like holding down our bodies and our spirits, and listening very carefully to when it's saying, when in relation our bodies and our spirits are being like, yo, you need to take good care all the time, you know, mm-hmm. all the time. Learning how to do that consistently is like extremely important. I also like always draw back to the land and like the lessons of the land, you know. Mm-hmm. And we see, you know, the land is like shaking. Mm-hmm. The land is like waking up angry. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the amount of heat waves that are happening here on the East Coast, like in New York, and just like the flux, like the lateness of our summer, and just like mm-hmm. You know, the earthquakes or like the storms, like what happened in New Orleans recently, or you know, all those things are in relation to the way that we've been treating like this, mm-hmm. this planet, you know? And so Mother Earth is like angry, mm-hmm. and waking up angry every single day. And we are, it's like so unpredictable, and we never know what she's like coming up with. But for her, it's predictable, because mm-hmm. she's taking in all the things that we're doing in mass that are devastating her. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like, I also like, you know, call in like the warriors and Mauna Kea right now. Yep. So, you know, I was born and raised in Hawaii, and, you know, I was speaking to the sisters that I've been circling with about this consistently in the past couple of days. Like when I was growing up in Hawaii, in the kingdom of Hawaii, and I'm so humbled to say that I was able to be raised there. Mm-hmm. Like the learnings of the Hawaiians, like of the indigenous people, is extremely present in on the land. The moment that you walk in there, even though like tourism has kind of take over in a lot of different ways on our land, Hawaii is one of the most magical places.
Yeah.
And that magic is because of the way that the people protect their land, and they mm-hmm. have continued to hold true to that role in relation to her. Mm-hmm. And so what you see in a place like New York is that people are not doing that. They're not mm-hmm. relational, you know, and, or they are relational, and the relation that they have with the land is that they take her for granted, that mm-hmm. they don't realize that even though we're on concrete, we are on sacred land still. Yep. And so like these types of things. And I'm just like, I'm just always thinking about how folks do that. Like I live yeah. in the Bronx, and it's like, it makes me so devastated all the time, like with the way that we don't take care of our hood. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that like the freaking contractors and the corporations are coming through and cleaning up what we haven't been doing, because colonization has made it that way for us, you know, that we're, that we live in a state of distress consistently, that we can't even pick up our own trash and can't take a moment to take mm-hmm. care of our homes, you know, because of the way that we're like always struggling to survive all of it. And so now they're coming into our hoods, and they're like starting to clean it and like change it up, and mm-hmm. we're no longer gonna live here anymore.
Oh yeah.
So it's gonna be a state of reaction. So now folks wanna clean, and folks now wanna be in reaction to like the neo-colonial moves that like these corporations are making on our neighborhoods. Which, yeah, let's do it now. But let's also like begin to build the foundation so we don't have to be reactionary more, that we can actually be relational, right?
Yeah.
So that's like one of the core things that I try to hold. Even when I'm like in like at odds or a conflict with someone on social media or whatever, I'm like, am I being reactionary? Am I being relational? Like, where's mm-hmm. the balance, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I'm being hella reactionary right now, because these fools need to be checked like really
yeah.
hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I think that's like valid though too. Like,
yeah,
I think that's hella valid. And I'm with you. Like, it's more rare these days, but there are times where I give myself permission and I hand the wheel over to my shadow and I'm like, have at it, girl.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead and decapitate this fool. Like, you know,
trust me. I understand. Yeah. Cause we've been having a lot of that too, with survival arts. Like, we've been dealing with a lot of bullshit, like a lot of bullshit, with like, I'm sorry if it's cool for me to curse.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's just been a lot of fuckery. Like, folks just kind of like telling us like some folks trying to pin us with some like capitalistic crap. Like, oh, you know, like, y'all talk about killing capitalism, but you're out here like with your business, like, creating capital gain. And I'm like, give me a second.
Yep.
Let me like inform you what is actually happening here. Like, this is not a business or a capitalistic venture. Like, I want to get that very, very straight. Like, a lot of people, you know, from the type of framing that we have would say that, you know, but no, this is like relational work and reclamation work that we're doing. And like, you know, we've circled with like hundreds of women that are cis, transgender, non-gender conforming all across the U.S. and Jamie with folks in the motherland. And hopefully I'll be able to go to the motherland with her next year. And it's all like in the name of like rising up against violence and degradation and the demoralization and exploitation of our bodies and spirits. Like, we're teaching women to the lessons of like protecting and defending also in relation to like capitalism. Like, we don't invest in capitalism. Like, I'm going to say that out straight to folks. Like, we don't invest in capitalism, but we understand that we have to create some equitable and just exchange so that we can sustain and preserve our circles in this world that uses money to break us and, and to exploit us. Like, women are the number one export in the Philippines. And that's like not just in regards to the like the intimate work of sex work, but also the intimate work of domestic work, cleaning people's homes, taking care of their children. Also like those that work in healthcare and do like the work of like nursing. Yes, you know, we have that type of like stereotype that folks have, Filipinos are nurses, right? Like, what a lot of Filipino women do is they do this really intimate work of taking care. And so, like, that's a part of the capitalism as well. And in that, like, in sex work, in domestic work, in healing work, in health work, like, women of color, migrant women, are being exploited by capital all the damn time.
Oh, yeah.
So people just need to complicate their understandings about how capitalism in its relationship to like the degradation of women, like that they're in line with each other, like they're hand in hand. And there's a lot of text that people can read about that. There's a lot of like proof all the time, like all the freaking time. And so that's something that I've been like extremely like, I'm just going to answer. Like, Jamie will send me like screenshots of things like that are in her DM, or like I'll be getting stuff and I'm like, like, stop right there. Like,
Well,
don't do that, you know?
It's super real. I'm 150% with you. I don't know if you got to see the dialogue I've been having recently with the folks on my page, but one of the movements that I'm trying to, I mean, I guess it's already been created, but really trying to push forward, so that way we can normalize it, which is, it's going to sound paradoxical, but I know it's going to make sense to you because I identify as an anarchist. And the movement is, I'm telling people that women of color need to be paid for their labor, period. And so that also means, you know, us healers, us spiritual workers, us readers, all of us need to be getting paid, period, because financial equity doesn't exist. And we live under a capitalist society. We live within capitalism. And so, you know, what does it mean to be anarchist and yet, you know, still technically I quote unquote run a business? Well, I do it from as much of an anarchist approach as I can, which is, you know, always interrogating the inner capitalism and the external capitalism and looking at ways in which, you know, am I perpetuating a system that's causing harm, or am I structuring things in a way that is actually like kind of like sidestepping capitalism and patriarchy, et cetera, and so forth. And so one of the ways that I wonder if you guys have something like this too, but one of the ways that I do that is like, so yeah, like I have a website and I sell stuff and that's, you know, a form of capitalism. However, you know, I also have like a scholarship fund where I am getting more and more witches of color into my readings and my offerings and my classes for free. And so what I'm doing is, and I'm also like able to keep things like affordable too. So there's a little bit of like financial equity there. But then, so the thing is, if money is power in our society, and effective anarchism often looks like redistribution of power and making things more horizontal in terms of power, then what that looks like is, you know, like the money comes in from however I'm able to get it, whether it's Patreon or on my show or whatever, in my shop. And then I redistribute the funds. And, you know, that is able to provide classes and readings and the healing and such for folks who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to work with me, because I think it's utter bullshit that, you know, spiritual services and teachings, et cetera, are like a luxury in our society. You know what I mean? And it's not accessible to a lot of folks. So if you're listening to this right now, if you are a person of color and you super need a reading someday, like you are always welcome to jump in my inbox and request that. Because I do free readings for folks all the time. And if you want to tap into your ancestral ways, if you want to learn, I teach hoodoo right now. That's part of my ancestral magic from being, you know, part Louisiana Creole Black. So if you want to reconnect and heal in that way, like you can do that for free too, if you're a Black witch that wants to learn. And so I think it's really important for folks to know that we can set up business structures in a way that we kind of like outsmart capitalism. That's, you know, right. And we gotta tap into, like you were kind of saying, I loved that you were talking about sacred survival. I think part of sacred survival is learning to become a trickster in addition to being a warrior, because the trickster in me goes, okay, so if you're going to force us to live under these, you know, shitty systems, then we got to figure out how to fucking trick the system in a way that, you know, serves who it's not serving. And so I'm sure, even though you guys get flack for that, I'm sure that you guys are doing it in a way that, you know, makes sense and puts your people first.
Yeah, always. And we also do like scholarship for folks who really are in need and feel they really want to come through to Circle, you know? And we also do sliding scale. Like that's a big part of the way that we roll. But, you know, I feel like one of the things that I've spoken to a lot of like family about is just like, as we like are deconstructing like these colonistic things that have held us to these systems of power like capitalism, like we have to survive it, right? So like in order to create a new world, you have to survive this one. And so like finding the balance is extremely important, and it's also like measuring whether or not your capitalism, like the way that you're in relation to capitalism, is actually is exploitative, just to be real, you know? Like if it's like, if you're actually honoring and in understanding about all of those that like have suffered or continue to suffer in relation to whatever you're making money off of, you know? So a lot of the times, like for me, when I speak to folks about like appropriation, because that's a huge conversation that comes up in ancestral remembrance work, I always tell folks like, we are in a time when knowledge is at our fingertips. Like we can know where all of our materials are coming from. We can like dive into like what symbology really means from different parts of the world, including from where we're from. We can understand who it is that has like you know, laid their hands on the materials or on the objects that we're exchanging and given of their labor. Like we can pay honor to all of those things, and we also can give to those things. And when we don't, and we choose not to, which some people do, and like, I prefer for you to straight up be like, you know, I know where my stuff comes from, but I'm not going to give any money to those indigenous folks who like created this like weaving that this garment is made out of, because whatever, like, because I want to go and buy a bag. I don't know. Like, it's like,
yeah.
I just feel like there are a lot of folks out there who are like, yeah, making mad money off of their spiritual work and making mad money off of their stuff. But I'm also like, I see you, bro. Like, I see you. I see how like you're not using any part of that in service to those that your work is like on top of. And that for me is like spiritual capitalism. So I have a conversation around that all the damn time. Like, people are out here because it's the wave, right? Like, when you talk about capitalism and the frameworks of supply and demand, there is a huge demand right now for healing. Like, we need to be healed. And the spiritual is like, is really arising in ourselves, like in our generation and the future generations of this time. Like, something that me and my partner have been coming to quite consistently also is the understanding that decolonization is actually a time period now. It's no longer like a theory or like, you know, like sets a framework like for us to do this healing. It's actually the time that we live in, which is the reason why a lot of us who are connected to spirit are rising to our gifts.
Yeah.
Because we live in a time that can equip us to take on those gifts in a good way.
And our anger too.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of folks aren't doing it in a good way, right? And they're not like addressing their anger in a good way. They're rather like taking it and then like commodifying things off of it. And I'm just like, yo, this is like really wild. So yeah, like I see the difference, right? And I do follow your work, and I think you're such a dope human being. So like, I just want you to know, like we're totally in line with each other. I wouldn't have said yes to like speaking with you, you know, otherwise, because I have been asked by a lot of different folks, but to, you know, sit down and talk. But there are some times that I have to say no, because I don't know if they'd be very happy with what I have to say. Like, you know what I mean?
Girl. Like, I know exactly what you mean, and I need to say more often, because like, I know, I'm sure you can relate. Like, people will ask me like, hey, would you want to be on this with me? Would you want to do this with me? And my first reaction is, are you sure you want me to open my mouth on your show? Like, you know what I do, right? Like, you know what I think and what I say, and you know that I don't hold back. Like, you know, I might very well blow apart your whole little light and fluffy, you know, show over there.
Trust me. And like, more recently too, like I've been asked to speak in a lot of institutional spaces or like spaces that are very like capitalist driven. And it's really interesting. Like, you know, people ask me to come through, and then I'm on these panels with folks who are totally on the opposite end. And I'm out here like speaking through my ancestors. Like, I'm out here praying like on a panel, you know what I mean? And they like are totally, it's just hard. I feel like it's really difficult for some folks like to really, to be confronted by that. And in the beginning of a panel or the beginning of a grouping, like someone may be like, oh, like I really follow your work. I'm totally in line with you. And then we're on the panel and I say some things that are really against what it is that they're, you know, speaking about. And then I never hear from them again, or they won't even like shake my hand or like give me a hug on the way out, you know, like they just kind of like try to dip out and don't even want to like connect with me. And I'm really pretty good at like, just, you know, speaking in a way that, that will be really loving and compassionate as much as possible, especially when I'm on a panel, you know? But that happens.
But even
all the
still, even still, cause that's a survival strategy, right? Like for, especially, us women of color who do hold a lot of rage. I feel like us especially have learned to survive through attempting to be as palatable and diplomatic and, you know, eloquent and nice as possible about it. And which is, that is a good skill, because, you know, sure, yeah, it helps some folks maybe be more open to hearing what we have to say, which is bullshit, but yeah, I get it, why it's there. And also, like, not doing that is also important too, though. Like, just like, fucking let them have it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I try to give myself permission to not be eloquent. And I actually also get really uncomfortable, because that's a compliment that I'm sure you get a lot too. But like, somebody will message me and be like, you're really good at, you know, thank you for saying it the way you said it. It was,
oh, here you go. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just felt like, you know, like it was very eloquent, or you articulate yourself very well.
Those microaggressions, like, come yeah. You, like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, do you know what you're saying? Like, yeah. You know, I actually have this video that I recorded yesterday that I'm holding on to, because I'm like, I don't know I think it's going to upset a lot of people, but that's fine. And I think, like, you and I, like, I hope there's other folks listening right now can hear that we're giving you permission to not be eloquent. Like, you don't mm-hmm. have to be nice yeah. about it. You don't have to make them comfortable. And mm-hmm. I feel like oftentimes, and people forget this about healers and spiritual teachers all the time, but, like, it is maybe my entire job as a spiritual teacher to, like, you know, not only, like, teach you stuff, but, like, to keep you uncomfortable, because that's what growth is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, if I make you feel good all the time, you know, then that means maybe I'm not doing my job well enough.
Yeah, that's real. I feel the exact same way, because, yep. like, that's what the healing work is about, is, like, really confronting the discomfort and, like, moving past it to the next moment when, like, things yeah. are uncomfortable, like, and you can grow, you know. And, like, I also believe that, like, we belong in all the spaces, like, mm-hmm. that we're being asked to, like, step and, like, have a conversation in, because that was one of the things for me, like, at one point or another as well. Like, I used to be like, why do they want me to be on this panel? Like, this mm-hmm. is very strange to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then especially because I'd look up, like, what these other folks were doing or whatever, and I'd be like, I don't know if I belong on this panel. Like, I'm totally on the opposite end of what's going on here. I don't know if they realize that. Because yeah. I think that a lot of folks just immediately see me as, like, this diasporic healer and, like,
totally.
A person who's connecting into her, like, indigenous ancestry, and they're just like, oh yeah, so she can be on our panel or whatnot. And then yeah. like, I come on and they're just like, oh, and she's like
yeah. Do you ever wonder, this is the other thing that I've been thinking about lately too, is, are they even taking the time to really see us, or are they yeah. just trying to create diversity on their That's panel right. or on their yeah. show? And am I bringing the diversity to yeah. their colonial shit show? And I sometimes that is it, unfortunately, you know. Yeah. And I like what you said about we belong in every space. It reminds me of wisdom from an indigenous elder that was passed down to me. And it's just that we bring balance to mm-hmm. everywhere we go. And, yeah. you know, I think that for a lot of us of the diaspora, that we feel misplaced, or mm-hmm. even our home where we were born or raised can feel very foreign to us in a lot of mm-hmm. ways, mm-hmm. Because we're surrounded by white faces and white spaces.
Yeah.
But the thing yeah. is, like, we're here for a reason, and
yeah,
we bring healing to these spaces.
Yeah. And I also feel like, you know, not only, like, because I feel like diversity of representation is another part of the way that, like, POC or those who are, like, marginalized and displaced, like, are tripped, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of, like, POC women, trans folks, Native folks who are not in line with, like, our liberation. Mm-hmm. They aren't, mm-hmm. you know, they're out here in service of of capitalism, of mm-hmm. colonization. And like, we have to really be super aware, you know, like folks are like, so I, my background in my work, like started with activism and the arts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I studied theater in my undergrad and my graduate study. And, you know, at first I was, as a high schooler, like I really just enjoyed being in front of folks and like doing performances. And there was something that was really healing about that for me in a lot of different configurations. And it was like a healing space for me through the traumas of my childhood, you know? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that like I began to adopt in the beginning of that time was like this thing in myself being like, oh, I want to be that brown girl who like will make all other little brown girls feel like they have a place in the world. Mm. To be like, you know, to be like the Halle Berrys and like, you know, those yeah. those figures that are in that capitalistic world and that are like, you know, like held up as like the representation. Like yeah. I represent all, you know, these folks. Yeah. And for me, like, there's something very wrong with that type of mentality that is still very like colonistic, you know, mm-hmm. because there's still not enough room for all of us to be yep. there. There's only like a select few. And of course they're going to choose the folks who are most palatable yep. to be in those spaces. Yep. And so I'm always telling folks like, don't be fooled. You know, at the end of the day, like diversity representation is straight up like, a ploy like mm-hmm. to continue to enforce colonial oppression and like mm-hmm. the goal like really for us is to like abolish all of the degradation, exploitation and the destruction of our people. And I feel like sometimes folks are just not in that mindset. They're not out here for that, you know, like to do that like deep work. And I'm like continuously in that place because the more and more that I become visible, and I'm sure you feel this way as well, like you have to check yourself more, you yep. know, because it's easy to like be like, damn, I just like the first time I got a really big check for like doing any of my work, I was just like, holy shit, like mm-hmm. people get paid this much, like mm-hmm. you know, period. Mm-hmm. And at one point or another, right, so it's sustainable and it allows us to like live, mm-hmm. but at one point does it become like the exploitation, you yep. know, when does it get there? And can we keep our like navigators inside of ourselves intact to really discern that? Or do we need to have the people, like I was saying earlier, like when we were talking about what was good, you know, like I have people in my life who have given 100% permission, like to, including my partner, to be like, yo, what you said during that panel, or like, yo, like the way that you're moving right now in regards to this and that, like you need to check it really quick mm-hmm. because it's not aligned right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, before I would only let my elders really do that to me. But sometimes even our elders, like they have some colonial mentality that like oh, yeah. has to be dismantled, you know? And so I have found that the people who are like from our generation who are like on the same wave, or younger folks, like young people who are like rising to that, like that those are the folks that I'm like, am I doing good? Like, tell me whether or not, like, you know, like and we have to be willing to like humble ourselves and ask people to check us, because otherwise we could easily fall into diversity representation right away. Right. Like it's so easy for us to do that.
Yeah. I think that's really important. Like, I guess I'll call it a spiritual practice because I think everything we do is spiritual. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm biased. But I think that continual questioning of self and interrogating motives and looking for plateaus and complicit behavior, things like that, because you're right, like there are some elders that I even look up to that I love, admire, and support their work, and yet as a psychic and also as a younger generation, I see their blind spot and I see where mm-hmm. they're still upholding you know the master, so to speak. And, you know, that's painful to watch because I love them. And also it reminds me of, you know, my work as a living ancestor and somebody who is, you know, eventually going to be an elder, to make sure that you're continuously looking for your blind spots and letting folks point them out to you and holding that space for each other. So that way it's less likely to become like a pervasive thing in your work and who you are and how you carry yourself. So that brings me to what I wanted to ask you about next. And that is like, where is your growth at right now? And like, what are your strategies?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's one of them for sure. You know, yeah. Like, I feel like a lot of the time it has to do with like where the ego starts to come through, you know?
Oh, yeah.
One of the big things for me also, like, one of the things that I tell folks when I'm doing the work that I do is this connection to source, right? Mm-hmm. And just like the understanding that sometimes, like, you know, we get things from reading or we get things from our interactions and like we come to an understanding about stuff from other people, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we make note of the source that we get that from.
Mm-hmm.
And that at other times it's the source is like divine and it just like knowledge drops into us.
Yeah.
You know, in a really powerful way. And we can't explain it sometimes, but we just know. Yeah. Or there are some things that like we know that expand and that like become complicated through us. And mm-hmm. there becomes a deeper understanding and a more rooted understanding about that lesson that may have been given to us from someone else, but has been like transformed and transmuted into something else because it's come through us. Right.
Right.
And that's one of the parts of the gifts that I have understood is a part of my lineage and the way that I walk. You know, one of my elders and teachers who I met when I was in Mayan community in near Tulum is called Rashala, a place called Rashala. The person who I was learning from and understanding from, like the culture from there, they told me that a part of my path was to tell the truth. Mm. Like that. That's like what I'm here to do. And that sometimes the truth is like nasty and it's not like, it's connected to water. So she was like telling me that the medicine was connected to water, that sometimes the truth feels really good and it feels like a nice rain shower, like, you know, and then sometimes it's like a typhoon.
Yeah.
Having all of that type of knowledge and accepting that type of knowledge within myself. And so anyone who follows me on social media knows that, like, I'm not just out here putting pretty pictures up. Like, a lot of the things that I post up are, like, thoughts that just come through me. And I'm consistently just, like, whatever comes to my mind, I just post about it. Because I believe that social media is a part of the way that we have, like, a tool there, you know?
Yeah.
And every now and then I get censored, but I don't care. You know, the five people who saw it before it got pulled down, like, that's important. Yeah. But, like, all that knowledge being in my heart and in my spirit, like a lot of the times my ego like starts to show up where I see like kind of like some of it has come up in this conversation even. I'm gonna be real, right? Like mm-hmm. there are points where I'm just like, what the fuck are y'all doing? Like mm-hmm. and I just wanna go up to people and be like, you are tripping and like you're freaking appropriating like our indigenous knowledge and using it for your advantage. Like shut the fuck up right now. Like
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and like that part of me wants to come out so much. Sometimes like there are sometimes I'm like in conversations and I just like wanna, you know, stand up and just like scream out like, you know, mm-hmm. a chant or like, you know.
Yeah.
I just be like, just be in the position where I can speak to the truth, like the real truth that is really difficult for people to see and hear. And I know that like a part of that is ego.
Yeah.
And so I'm consistently like right now in this time in my life, like trying to keep her like in a position where she can see herself, you know,
that
egotistical part of myself that just wants to tell people what is right and wrong.
Yeah.
Because a part of me in my spiritual work feels like I know, you know,
yeah.
but I also understand that that doesn't come out and isn't stomached in the, like by a lot of people. And I also know that like, there is still something that those folks that I want to call out to are living that mm-hmm. is extremely important. So I'm consistently trying. And so I use those, I think I've used these two words already in our conversation, but The thing that I usually tell myself is like, have you complicated this? Have you expanded it? Have you complicated your understanding of this person? Are you in a place of expanding how you're seeing them right now? And so those are like two things that like I use consistently. And like, I'm very heady. Like I have a lot of, like I said, like the knowledge dropping, like that's a huge part of the way that I roll. And things just kind of start to like formulate. I'm also a Capricorn. Like my sun sign is a Capricorn. My rising is Sagittarius. So you can see like,
yeah.
And so like, you know, that Capricorn like tends to be able to really create some structure around like the many things that are flowing through me. So one thing is like the complicate and expand. And then a really core teaching that I use consistently, and that's actually in my actual physical classroom with my students, is like three A's that I believe like are a part of how we can liberate ourselves from an oppressive situation. And it's awareness, accountability, and agency. So like, have I checked what my true awareness is, and where are my like blank spots of like what I'm not aware of this entire situation, like all the different corners? Who do I need to like tap into to like be more aware? Like, how are others contributing to my awareness? Like, how am I actively like working to be aware and be knowledgeable? And then like accountability, which we already spoke about, you know, being such a crucial part of like the practice and the ritual, is like, who holds me accountable? How am I holding others accountable? How is there a reciprocation and accountability? And how are we like holding each other responsible to our integrity at every given point? And then the last thing being like agency, like, when do I have the power to change something, and do I take it? And like, when don't I have the power, but who do I look to, who can assist in me either gaining that power, or being able to wield their power in order to like help us in that pursuit of liberation? And also like where the collaborations of power can come in, you know?
So
those are the things that really help me like to step down from my from my ego space, is just like, yo, three A's.
Yep.
You know, awareness, accountability, agency, like, where's that at? And then like, all right, now you need to expand and you need to complicate this, Jay, like before really getting into a place where like you're just gonna like, you know, all that fire, all that like Sagittarian, like that, like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny is when you were saying that, it made me think of two more A's, because you were like, looking, when I don't have the power, who am I looking to either get that power or have them leverage their power? And I was thinking, other accomplices, allies, and antagonists.
Nice. Yeah,
there's a lot of A's.
Right?
Bring
relational into the conversation. Like, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so huge.
That's real. And a lot of people don't want to be like to have accomplices, you know? Folks just want to be dolo, which is also a part of like, I feel like the colonization thing. So like, I really appreciate folks who are like really working to gather tribe, you know, like gather like collective thought, communal thought, like what you're doing here with this podcast, like, that's a huge part of it, like this interlinking of each other, like the interconnectedness that's being drawn through us, you know, like a lot of people don't want to do that. They just want to like make it just their voice as like the platform, which again like returns back to that whole like representation thing, you know. So I love that you added those A's, because that's like hella real. And like, also, that's another thing, like when I feel like people are like going off and doing all kinds of like crazy shit that I'm just like, oh my God. I feel like a lot of the time it's because they don't have folks that hold them accountable. You know? So my dog is like going off again.
No worries. No worries.
So for all of like the folks, like you hear my dog barking, it's usually because it, like, she's saying like, yes, I agree.
You know what's funny is the last recording I did with somebody, my dog did that too, and it was right when the guest was here in my house and we were recording. It was right when our guest Medina was saying something really powerful, and my dog Freya was like, yeah, that, you know, and Freya loves Medina. So, you know, the animals are wise and they're part of what I pay attention to too. So that's perfect, JL. And I love that, you know, those things are definitely calls to action for, you know, other POC, and there's definitely some messages in there for the white allies too. So that's absolutely perfect. Can you tell us, before we, you know, start to close things up, can you tell us where people can find you, your work, and how they can support you, whether that's through social media, your website, or, you know, if there's somebody listening right now, especially, you know, non-POC, so our white friends, our white allies, if you are learning something from JL right now and you would like to pay for her labor, although she is also getting paid, you know, being here with me, if you would like to add to that, you are certainly welcome to do so. And JL, you're more than welcome to let us know what your Cash App, your Venmo, like all that stuff. Put it out there.
That's so dope, sis. Thank you. If y'all want to connect with me, you can find me. I'm a huge like Instagram head. So if anyone wants to hit me up on IG, my handle is JL Creator. And you can also find me on, you know, Facebook, but it's my full name, Janalyn Umipig. And I do have a website, but it's not really up to date. So we're just not going to go there. If you need to find me, just go ahead and go on my Instagram or my Facebook. They're both public. So you're not going to have to like add me or anything. If you look through my page and then you realize like, nope, don't want to be, I'm not aligned or I'm not ready for that. It's all good. And you know, for that really generous offer that you gave, sis, like my Venmo is also JL Creator. And if also folks are with PayPal, it's my email address. And also if folks want to just hit me up on my email address, it's JLYNUMI@gmail.com. I'm always like happy to receive emails from folks with like questions, or just like if you want to be in connection and relation to the work that's going down. I also would ask for folks to connect with Survival Arts that we've been talking about on this podcast interview. So at Survival Arts on Instagram and the Academy of Survival Arts on Facebook. So, and then survivalarts.com, I think. Let me double check real fast. but yeah, so it's just like really dope to be in connection. It's survivalarts.org.
Okay, perfect.
So yeah.
Awesome. That's perfect. And the other thing is I'm going to take all of this information. I'm going to collect it from you, JL, afterward. And I'm going to also have it up on my website where, you know, the link to this podcast will be when it's released. And it will also be up on my Patreon too. So you'll be able to find all of the ways to connect with JL, how to support her, the work, the Survival Arts, all of it. It will all be there, and be sure to seek it out. So thank you so much for being here, JL.
Thank you so much.
I needed this. I'm sure everybody listening needed this too. Just an amazing, this is a perfect way to like start my day.
Yeah.
And
me too.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm thrilled to get to know you. I'm really looking forward to, you know, digging into some more ways to connect with you and your work. Okay. This is right on some stuff that I'm looking into, like personally in terms of my warriorship. So I'm glad that our paths have crossed now. So
me too, sis. I celebrate you. Thank you so much.
Oh, likewise. Okay. Now folks, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting it on Patreon. You can do so by visiting patreon.com/revolutionarymystic. All of our guests, all of which are people of color. Oftentimes they are queer, trans, disabled, etc., of multiple marginalized identities. They are all paid. And that is part of my movement to hashtag actually support witches of color. And of course, if you want to know more about what I do, hire me to read for you, to speak, to teach, etc. at an event, you can do so, and you can reach out to me via email, which is megan@revolutionarymystic.com. And you can, of course, check out my Hoodoo Botanica, psychic readings, online classes, the scholarship program for witches of color, the free Facebook group, and witch tips that I post on my YouTube channel. You can get access to all of that stuff that I do on revolutionarymystic.com. So thank you all for listening. Please don't forget to give us a good podcast review on iTunes, Google Play, whatever platform you're listening to us on right now. And of course, share it with your friends. And until next time, Mystics, I send you so much love and power. Thank you all for joining me here. Thank you, JL.
Thank you, sis.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Revolutionary Mystic Podcast. If you enjoy this show, please consider supporting it on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/revolutionarymystic. All of our guests are paid as part of a movement to hashtag actually support witches of color by creating financial equity. You can also check out the online Hoodoo Botanica, book psychic readings, take online classes, apply for the scholarship program for witches of color, join the free Facebook group, and watch Witch Tips on my YouTube channel by visiting revolutionarymystic.com.